I grew up in Quincy, Illinois. Spent most of my life here in Quincy, other than my time that I did my undergraduate as well as law school at the University of Illinois. I was fortunate enough to earn a football scholarship at the University of Illinois, which then rolled into law school there, and then I returned to Quincy to start practicing law.
And tell us about your first wife, Corey, how you met and what the relationship was like.
Sure. We met actually while we were both in college. We did go to high school together, but didn't date at that time. It was after we both went to college. She went to the University of Iowa and I went to the University of Illinois that we started a relationship. We were engaged while we were in college and then got married shortly thereafter.
And so you went on to have four children, is that right?
That is correct. Our oldest was born while I was still in law school, and then we had three more sons that were born while we were here in Quincy.
And so preceding her death, the news that's out there kind of paints the marriage in a way where things got relatively troubled. There was alcoholism going on. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
There was alcoholism in the home. It was we were married and loved each other, but it wasn't a perfect marriage, and the alcoholism didn't help that unperfect marriage.
And preceding Corey's death, there was you said that there was sickness preceding the events that day. Is that right?
Yes, Corey had been sick the weekend prior to her death, and the days preceding her death, she had flu-like symptoms. We thought it was just that, the flu, and unfortunately, as it turned out, it was a lot more.
And so tell us a little bit about that morning, what happened, and you know, your reaction in the days that followed and even the years that followed, because there was this long period of time before the criminal case came up, right?
Right. In the days, again, preceding Corey's death, she was ill the morning of Valentine's Day, February 14th, 2006. I woke up. We decided to have me cancel a class and for me to take the children to school. So I did that. She came downstairs, helped a little bit with getting them ready, and then went upstairs just prior to me taking the children to school. And then when I returned home, I had discovered that that she had died. And so ultimately, EMS arrived, and a police detective arrived, and there was an investigation, there was an autopsy, and there was an inquest. And what was communicated to me and our family was that that she had a fatty liver, which could have contributed to her death. However, the actual autopsy was designated her death as the cause to be undetermined. Fast forward 8.5 years later, I had remarried and was practicing law here in Quincy, Illinois. And a police detective, unbeknownst to me and my family, was investigating or reinvestigating Corey's death. And on August 27th, 2014, I was indicted and arrested.
What was your reaction that day? Was it totally out of the blue, or were you aware that there was speculation around her death and that this could be a potential thing?
I was not aware of any concerns or suspicions on anyone's part. I was not aware of the investigation. I was completely surprised as I walked out of my law office to go to meet my wife for lunch to have a police officer waiting at my car He told me to put my hands on my vehicle. I complied. He asked me to put my hands behind my back. He put the handcuffs on, put me in a police vehicle, and took me to the Quincy Police Department, where he and another police detective questioned me for approximately 2 hours.
And so from there, we've talked to Bill Clutter, who has filled us in, you know, and I think a lot of people have kind of followed this as it went on. So from there, there was a mistrial, correct? And what was, you know, from there, what were you thinking about your future?
Well, it took a while to even get to the first trial. The entire time, over a year, I had spent in the Hancock County Jail as my attorneys at the time were preparing for that trial. We had the trial here in Adams County. It was 2 weeks, and at the end, the jury deliberated 16 hours, and they could not come to a decision. So the judge in that case, or in that trial, declared a mistrial. At that point, we had to start over. My wife started gathering resources and finding people to come to what would become my second defense. The prosecution indicated that it intended, and it did, proceed with a second trial. And so in the process of marshaling those resources and my wife, Christine, working with Bill Clutter, we came across a number of people who were willing to help, ultimately leading to my new attorneys in the second trial, John Lovey and Tara Thompson, who are with the University of Chicago's Exoneration Project.
And so you mentioned your wife, Christine, who you're married to now, and you both had also known each other during high school. Is that right?
We did. We dated in high school. She was my homecoming date our senior year. After that, we went our separate ways and rediscovered each other in 2013, and we were married in December of 2013.
And so in between this relationship and Corey's death, you were married to a student named Erica Gomez. Is that right?
That's right. Ms. Gomez was a student of mine, an older student. We started a relationship in August of 2012, 6 months after Corey's death. And ultimately then in 2008, we were married. And then I filed for divorce in December of 2012.
And so Gomez ended up being a part of the prosecutor's, their case, what they had, and she leveled a lot of different accusations regarding abuse and poisoning even, which I'm not sure if that was allowable in court. But can you talk a little bit about her role and what your thoughts were there?
Ms. Gomez started making accusations against me shortly after I filed for divorce. She made accusations to the Illinois Army National Guard, of which I was a member. She also made numerous accusations throughout the divorce, and the divorce was finalized in September of 2013, but she continued to make accusations unbeknownst to me, to the police detective involved with the death reinvestigation, and many of those accusations were contained in police reports that he prepared. She did not testify. She was barred from testifying in the first trial because the judge determined that she didn't have any relevant evidence to offer. However, in the second trial, the judge prior to the second trial ruled differently, and then she did testify, again, making very similar accusations that she had made both during the divorce and during Detective Adam Gibson with Quincy Police Department, his investigation. I explained that she had made accusations throughout both the divorce and then the investigation, none of which were true, some of which were investigated by the Illinois Army National Guard, and they found that that they were not true, that there was no basis for her complaints. And even some of the more outrageous accusations that occurred in the investigation, one of which was that I had poisoned her, the Quincy Police Department actually followed up on, and it was proven through toxicology that she wasn't poisoned. But that didn't stop Detective Adam Gibson or the Quincy Police Department or the prosecution in this case from putting her on the stand in the second trial, and they did so, and she was impeached, and it was demonstrated that all her accusations were false, and the jury got to see that during the second trial.
And before, I guess, we get to that brings up something else I wanted to ask about, as far as Detective Gibson being the one to reopen this case.
Mm-hmm.
You have experience, obviously, with the legal system. What was your thought, you know, to hear that new investigator thought that your case was worth reopening?
Well, again, I didn't know that the investigation was going on. I was shocked when I was arrested, and again, I was questioned by Detective Gibson. He explained to me some of the aspects of his investigation. I was in disbelief that it was even going on. I couldn't believe that I had already been indicted. He informed me that I was on the bond had been set at $5 million. So I was just shocked by the whole situation, and I didn't really know much about the evidence that he claimed to have against me, but later through preparation for the first trial and then especially through preparation for the second trial, we were able to discover a lot about Detective Gibson, his inexperience. He had just gone to, well, he had just been named or transferred from a canine officer to an elder service officer in December of 2013 when he began the investigation. He appeared to have started it right after taking a one-week course on how to conduct a homicide investigation. It quickly appeared as we reviewed the path of his investigation that he was creating his first homicide case. And so what we learned in the weeks and days prior to the second trial was that he had consulted with numerous pathologists, and it took him almost 6 months to find a pathologist who agreed with his theory that Corey had died by means of suffocation. And then when he finally found that one pathologist to agree with him, he and the special prosecutor, Ed Parkinson, took that single opinion before a grand jury in August of 2014 and indicted me.
This is Illinois Edition. That's Curtis Lovelace, former prosecutor, former football player for the U of I, and Quincy native. He was charged in two separate trials of killing his wife, Corey Lovelace, on Valentine's Day 2006. He says she died of natural causes, but an investigator argued that she died by suffocation. He was recently found not guilty after a second trial. The first was a mistrial due to a hung jury. And so now, looking back, having been found not guilty, how has this changed your view of the legal system, if it has at all? Do you still have faith in it being overall fair?
Yes, I still have faith in our criminal justice system and our legal system. We worked within that system to prove my innocence. It took a while. It took 2.5 years. It devastated us financially. It devastated my reputation. But nevertheless, we did make it through the process and came out of the process. As far as my faith in the system, what I've explained to people in the past is that, you know, the system is a system. It's not inherently good or bad. It is only as good or as bad as people working within it. And although a majority, I believe, of prosecutors and police officers are good people trying to do the right thing, not all of them are. And when you have bad detectives such as Adam Gibson or a prosecutor like Ed Parkinson, who pushes these types of cases forward, you have bad situations. Fortunately, in our case, we were able to uncover evidence that had been withheld. We were able to uncover evidence that Detective Gibson had attempted to destroy, and we were able to present that to a jury. Once they saw all the evidence, you could see the difference in the case. You know, the first trial ended in a jury that, or with a jury that couldn't reach a decision after 16 hours and a mistrial. The second jury deliberated for 2 hours and came back with a not guilty verdict. So the system did work. It didn't necessarily work the way it should have or as quickly as it should have, but ultimately truth did prevail within our criminal justice system.
And what about the other just more personal effects? In Quincy, I'm sure this has gotten people talking, but also you have out of your four kids, your daughter, it's from what it sounds like, from what I've seen and read, caused, you know, your relationship to be estranged. So can you just, you know, where do you go from here?
We haven't made any definite decisions. Right now, my wife and I are talking about, you know, what is next in our life. I have decided to reactivate my law license. It was something that I guess you could describe it as having expired while I was in jail for almost 2 years and awaiting trial for 2.5. So I'm in the process of reactivating that and should get that quickly done. But we're really not sure what I'm going to do with that or where we're going to go. It's still, you know, it hasn't been too long since the verdict. We couldn't really make any plans past that. But we're in the process of working that out. We still have bills to pay. You know, again, the prosecution of this case has devastated us financially. So fortunately, our children are doing well. Christine and I have, you know, two boys who are in the military. They were able to make it through this and move on with their lives. We still do have one son at home who's in high school, and so we have him to raise yet. So we'll figure this out and move forward. But there's still a lot of questions that that need to be answered, that should be answered, and but I'm sure we'll find answers.
Well, and as far as restitution for your time and looking into what went wrong here, is that kind of what you're saying? You know, it's open-ended for now, but you might be pursuing answers to those types of questions?
We've been asked about a civil suit. It's something that we haven't made a decision on yet. Again, we're only just, you know, a couple weeks off of the not guilty verdict, and so we're trying to figure out a lot of things right now.